So why don't we just start with a couple of prayers in the prayer book. We'll do the regular Sunday prayers. So if you turn to the first base sheet, we'll do Shakyamuni Buddha's mantra three times. Taya ta mune mune maha munaye soha. Taya ta mune mune maha munaye soha. Taya ta mune mune maha munaye soha. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. And if you turn the page, we'll do Chenrezig's mantra 8 times and then the Green Tara's mantra 7 times. Om Mani Padme Hum, 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 Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha. 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 So welcome everyone. Let's just rejoice that we all made it here today. Big holiday weekend and a nice day out. So really wonderful to come here and be thinking about this topic, about how to really make our life more meaningful and get the juice out of every moment. So I recognize most folks. Is there anybody who's here at the center for the very first time today? I don't believe that's true, Jim Barnes. So, okay, great. Well, let's take just about 60 seconds and sit quietly and set a motivation for today. It can be something for ourselves, something for other people. The highest motivation is, of course, thinking about really achieving enlightenment so that we can be of greatest benefit to others. But let's just think about what we are hoping for from today. So along with all the other things that are going on today, today is the official birthday for His Holiness the Dalai Lama, his 78th birthday. So happy birthday. And we'll be celebrating that tomorrow at 10:45 for anybody who wants to come for that. So I just wanted to set a little bit of context for today. I'll be talking a little bit about meditation and meditations on death and why we might want to do those. And we'll have a little discussion time, too, to talk about the advantage of doing that and what gets in our way. Then I'm going to lead a meditation called the 9-point death meditation. Then we'll maybe stretch our legs, and then Stephanie Smith is going to talk about the death dissolution process and a meditation for that. So that ought to round out our time today. So this is the second in this this year-long series on looking at death and dying. The first session was sort of just getting the ball rolling and sort of thinking about death and what we want our relationship to be to death, some topics like that. And there was a brainstorming session there for people, those of you who weren't in attendance there. People talked about sort of what they were hoping to get from this whole series, because we'll be meeting the first Saturday of the month every month for a year. So some of the topics that were mentioned at that last session were to have a peaceful approach to death, to thinking about what we want from our own death and being of benefit to others when we're dying, and living with an awareness of death, and meditating on the death process and dying well, lessening our fear of death, and giving meaning to life. So I picked those out because I think all of those we're going to touch on today. So the whole point of today's journey, and really for this whole series, is to inspire us, I think, to be looking at our own death and how we think about death in general, so that we can live fuller lives and be more aware of things in the current moment, have a more meaningful life. So I just want to add a little caution today that if anything that we talk about today creates some fear, that's probably going to be expected for some of us. But if it's a kind of fear that feels overwhelming or tends towards the hopelessness or anything like that, then it's really a misunderstanding of what we're trying to talk about. So if anything like that does come up for you, please do talk to Stephanie or me or someone about that, because that's not the point, and that means maybe something's a little bit off. So the whole point is actually to make each moment more meaningful and not to add any kind of paralyzing fear. That's not where we're going. So if you're getting anything like that, please do share that and let's talk about it, because if you leave here feeling worse in that way, then it's not a good use of our time. So I found a quote when I was preparing for today from one of the Kadampa Geshe's, from Kadampa Geshe Kamapa. And he said that we should fear death now while there's still time to act, and at the time of death be fearless. And I thought that was a really nice way to sum up what I just tried to say. So, and Geshe-la has said quite often that, you know, this is really something to think about on a daily basis, and it's not, there's no point in it just being academic. You know, if that's what we're doing, might as well be doing something else. You know, we could be out helping people or something. I don't know. That's my addition, not Geshe-la's. But, you know, that really this is something to really think about. How do we incorporate this into our day-to-day lives? So just curious, and don't feel like you have to raise your hand, but is there anybody that does a daily meditation on death right now? Okay. So that's helpful to see that those who are not doing that are not alone. I think probably a lot of people have heard this before, but, you know, His Holiness the Dalai Lama does a death meditation 4 or 5 times every day. And so I think that's a great response to that. Well, thinking about all this death stuff so depressing, right? Because I wouldn't call His Holiness a depressed person, at least as far as we can see. So really, I think there is something to this idea that these notions do help us. Moment to moment, day to day. So one of the articles I used in preparing what we're going to talk about here for the next little bit was an article on the Lama Yeshe Wisdom Archives by Geshe Darge. And Geshe Darge started the teaching program for Westerners at the Library of Tibetan Works and Archives in Dharamsala. His Holiness Dalai Lama asked Geshe Darge to start that. And so he's someone who's taught Westerners who did teach before he passed away, Westerners quite a bit. And this article, if anybody wants the link, I'm happy to send it out after. Just let me know. But some of the quotes I have in here come from him. And I wanted to just offer the lineage that he describes about talking about all of these things that we're going to talk about today. He said, "The tradition of death meditation taught here originated with Buddha Shakyamuni, and was practiced by such renowned meditators as the Bodhisattva Shantideva, the early Kadampa Geshes, Milarepa's disciple Gampopa, the incomparable yogi Lama Jesongkhapa, the Dalai Lamas, and many other renowned masters. Eventually, it came down to Pabangka Rinpoche, one of the greatest teachers alive at the turn of the 20th century. Pabangka gave it to Kyabje Trijang Dorje Chang, the junior tutor of His Holiness the Dalai Lama. And it was from this perfect guru, Kyabje Trijang Dorje Chang, that Geshe Darge heard it." So, you know, there really is a lineage that can show that this really came from the source. So, I thought it might be interesting if we spend just a few minutes doing a short meditation on impermanence to get us started. I think impermanence is a natural segue into looking at death. And I think it's just always a helpful place to start. So, you know, just keep in mind that everything is always changing, arising, abiding, and disintegrating moment to moment. And I have a quote from His Holiness that I found that I really liked. "Old friends pass away, new friends appear. It's just like the days. An old day passes, a new day arises. The important thing is to make it meaningful, a meaningful friend or a meaningful day." So, you know, things are always changing, but that doesn't mean that that has to be a bad thing. So, and as we're doing this meditation, I thought it might be helpful to think about something that Lama Zopa Rinpoche has talked about, and I mean, many of the teachers, that there are two levels of impermanence. There's the gross, which is, you know, the change of matter that happens over a longer period of time, what we usually think about when we think about change. And then there's the subtle, which is the inner changes of mind and the invisible changes of matter that happen just in the shortest splice of a second. And all that's happening all the time, whether we're aware of it or not. So our minds really can't perceive that subtle change so much. So gross change is, you know, what we usually notice. So, okay, so we'll do this meditation. So just calm our minds for a moment. As Lama Yeshe says, bring our mind where our body is. And just set an intention, taking this look at impermanence as a way to help us work on our own minds so that we can be of better benefit to others. So as we're sitting, become aware of your body. Think of its many different parts: arms, legs, head, skin, blood, bones, nerves and muscles. Examine these one by one, really probing them with your feelings. And contemplate the nature of these things, their substance, their texture, their shape and size. Be sensitive to the body at work, the movement that's going on in each moment, the ebb and flow of your breath, the beating of your heart, the flow of your blood and the energy of your nerve impulses. And then bring your awareness of your body to even more subtle level, at its cellular structure, that it is entirely composed of living cells moving about, reproducing, dying and disintegrating. Now turn your attention to your mind. It too is composed of countless parts, thoughts, perceptions, feelings following one after the other, ceaselessly. Simply watch this ever-changing flow of mental experiences. Now turn to the outer world. Slowly increase your awareness to include your immediate surroundings. Picture in your mind the seat you are on, the walls and ceilings of this room, the space around you and the objects filling it. Consider that each of these, although appearing solid and static, is actually a mass of tiny particles whizzing around. Stay with that experience for a while. Then continue to expand your awareness of subtle impermanence to take in the building we are in, the trees, the street, people, animals, cars, the city, going out into the mountains, the ocean, as far as you like. And recall that each being or object you touch with your thoughts is at a very subtle level changing right now. Nothing remains the same from one moment to the next. It's unrealistic and self-defeating to cling to things as though they were permanent. Whatever is beautiful and pleasing will change and eventually disappear, so we can't expect it to give us lasting happiness. Also, whatever is unpleasant or disturbing won't last forever. It might even change for the better, so there's no need to be upset or to reject it. Life is so fragile. Its nature is transitory. It's easy to see how it changes in only 1 year, 1 month, 1 week, 1 day, 1 hour, 1 minute, second by second. As years, months, days, split seconds are passing, and you get older, the perfect chance of attaining enlightenment given by our human rebirth is becoming exhausted. And we're getting closer to death. We have the right equipment, a pilot, a spaceship, and enough fuel to make a trip around the universe and visit all the planets. But here we sit, engine running, burning up the fuel, while our mind is distracted by other things. The longer our mind remains distracted, the more we miss the chance of seeing the planets. As the fuel burns, time gets shorter. So if all of this is true, what can we do? We can use this understanding to be inspired to take advantage of today, to make today meaningful, to practice even now. So if any positive thoughts or merit was created by doing this meditation, let's dedicate it for helping us work with our minds and be of greatest benefit to others. So how was that? Everybody doing okay? Hanging in there? So why is thinking about death important? I was thinking we might have a little discussion. Jill, would you mind getting the mic? And I think there are probably some obvious reasons and maybe some more subtle and then some personal ones, but... Maybe if somebody has something that's more personal than academic, that'd be great to hear. Yeah, Susie, did you have something?
I guess this is personal. I want to be prepared. I want to not be afraid when I die and know that I did my best to prepare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, it's coming, so... Better to be prepared. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Anybody else?
Being prepared for ourselves is really good, but being prepared to lose someone else, I think, is really important, too.
Yeah. Yeah, so we're not only looking at our own experience, or maybe it is still our experience, but it's our experience of someone else's death, not only our own experience of death. Yeah.
And making the most of the time.
Right.
That we have.
Right. Yeah. So recognizing time is precious, no matter who in this room is going first, it's precious for all of us, right? Yeah. Yeah. So what gets in our way, you know? Let me answer my two cents on why I think it's important. So I do some form of a death meditation every day. And I just find it extremely helpful. One of the advantages, I think, of doing it regularly is that I see my, you know, each day there's a snapshot of that relationship, so I can see trends and I can see, you know, where I may be having some success and then maybe where something new that's a barrier is coming up, you know, so it's a nice way to sort of take inventory, I guess, on a regular basis. And I don't know how many of you know, but I was living in India and then I came back almost 3 years ago now, and I was quite sick when I came back. And so then it was a very rich experience because, you know, you're really thinking death is certain, the time is not, today could be the day that I die, and there's some, you know, meat to that. and I realized at that time, one of the things, you know, I sort of imagined, okay, so if today is the day, what, you know, what's my mind going to do? And I realized quite surprise for me that I was very attached to my mother. Now, on the one hand, that's not so surprising, but I really thought that I'd kind of gotten in a good place with that. You know, I mean, love my mom, but didn't feel so clingy, you know. But then when I was thinking today I could really die, that really came up for me, and I thought, oh, so if today's the day, that's going to be a real problem, you know. So then I did some work on that, you know, was able to sort of, you know, figure out what my plan was. I mean, maybe call her more, but not be so attached, or, you know, whatever. And so, point being, you know, each one of us is going to have our own version of this story, but there was a very practical, you know, way of how to live each day based on sort of what I uncovered by really thinking about this. So I'm just the biggest cheerleader for this practice because I think it's so helpful for us to really find meaning, you know, in our day-to-day. So in the past when I've talked with people about this, there's a fair amount of fear that comes up about if I really do this every day, that's pretty scary. I'm wondering whether it's that barrier or what other barriers we have, if anybody's feeling brave and wants to share maybe where they get stuck or where, you know, why everybody didn't raise their hand when I said, who does this every day, you know?
I've tried, but I know Venerable Tendrin said do it at night when you go to sleep, and I've tried doing that, and I don't really know how to do it, which is a big obstacle. I just feel like I'm kind of bumbling around.
Yeah, so that's a great point. And I do mine in the morning, so, you know, not saying that one's better than the other, but I think that you can choose what works for you. You know, of course, the teachings say, I'm going to paraphrase because I don't have the quote right in front of me, but, you know, if you don't think about death in the morning, you've wasted the morning. If you don't think about death at lunch, you've wasted, you know, the middle of the day. And if you don't think about death in the evening, you've wasted the night. So, you know, I think any time's okay. In terms of how to do it, again, there's all kinds of options, but one could be the meditation we just did, which is mostly contained in this very old cover. It looks different now, but How to Meditate. I know a lot of you have this book, and if not, we have it out here. I added a couple of things at the end to this, but there's a really lovely, this isn't the version we're going to do, but we're going to do something close to this. There's a lovely meditation, particularly on death, that we're going to do in a few minutes, that's a version of it's in here too. So, you know, if you're looking for some structure, this is a great tool. Yeah.
I don't practice it just mainly because of timing right now, so it's not really an obstacle to it, but I was just thinking about it. What I do practice now is sort of an on-the-road kind of thing, and I just try to think, well, okay, that's the one, you know, like that's the car that's going to get me, and I just think about it all day long and see how it feels to think if this is it, or if this is the last time I see this person, or...
Sure.
And I even try a little bit to say it around my daughter so that, you know how we say, today could be the day, and try to make it kind of something that's part of our vernacular.
Yeah.
So that won't, not that it would change her viewpoint, but that it's part of the discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And so I try to just put it more into the daily life routine.
Sure. And that's the whole point of any practice, right? It really, it's not about the cushion as much as, you know, what you're doing moment to moment throughout the day. So that sounds very, you know, like an excellent way to move you along really appreciating that this time is precious and, you know, act now because, you know, you don't know how much longer you have. Yeah. Anybody else? Yeah.
With me, there's a resistance because I think, well, if I spend a lot of time thinking about death, maybe I'll just die.
Sure.
And Emily died at a fairly young age, and she used to teach the death class, the death and dying class. So I know that might sound silly, but it is an obstacle for me.
Yeah. Oh, I think there's a lot of resistance in all kinds of forms, and I've heard that one before too. This idea, like sort of, I might manifest it if I'm thinking about it, right? So I think one of the things that could be valuable about that is really examining that and trying to figure out if you think that's true. How much is it true? Where if you think about winning the lottery, it helps you win the lottery, or or you know, if you think about whatever it is, positive or negative, that really happens, you know, sort of challenge yourself. And then if you decide, well, yeah, that really does happen all the time, okay, then that's valid. But if you find out that it's, you know, less based in logic and maybe a little more in whatever else, you know, then it can give you a foot in to try to shift it, you know. It's just what we experience for ourselves. We need to check it out, you know. And I would encourage anybody who, you know, is on board. I mean, you're on board already at some extent, or you wouldn't be here today, right? So there's an intellectual, yeah, this is something I'm at least interested in exploring. If you're there but, you know, not putting it into operation, just try to look at what your resistance is and then see, is there any way to challenge that resistance, or do you think that's valid? And yeah, it's the right move not to be doing it. You know, just explore. It's all a grand experiment. You know, I think of it all as like we're just gathering information. You know, we're just checking it out. So, okay. Well, what I thought we'd do next then is I've got this very short story I wanted to read. I don't know how many of y'all have heard of Kirti Tsensab Rinpoche. He was one of Lama Zopa Rinpoche's teachers, and he meditated for 15 years up above Dharamsala, and it's quite an amazing story about what he did during that time. He spent, you know, I don't know exactly how it broke down, 7 years on Lama Rim or something like that, and then a couple years on one aspect of Asa Yoga Tantra, another couple years on that, and then the last 2 years reviewing everything he'd done in the previous 13 years. And then he was a teacher that traveled all over and has been to many FPMT centers, but he passed away a few years ago. But there's this just short little story that Vula Zarpani, I don't know, does anybody know what her relationship was? I think she was just one of his main students. I'm not really sure, but she wrote quite a bit about her experiences with him, so she had this story. So as we're told again and again to be prepared for any eventuality, I'd like to share the following story with you. While we were in Israel, and after some 5 days of diarrhea, Kirti Tsensab Rinpoche was not feeling well, and it became obvious that we had to go to the hospital to run some more serious tests. While undergoing various checks and answering general medical questions, we noticed that there was a commotion and everybody seemed to be glued to the TV screen that was reporting some sort of news bulletin. We could see from people's faces that something serious was happening, so I asked someone to translate the news to me. I was told that within the last 6 hours, Israeli airplanes had started bombing the southern suburbs of Beirut, and in effect, war was declared between Israel and Lebanon. I started wondering whether I should let Rinpoche and Alec know straight away, given Rinpoche's delicate condition, or whether I should wait until all tests were completed and then find a proper time to discuss the news. The situation was developing rapidly, because we were very close to the border and the hospital was put on high alert. At the same time, the doctor told us that the blood tests indicated that there was something more serious than diarrhea, and we were advised to have more tests done. I quickly made the decision to inform Rinpoche and Alec straight away, and then made the recommendation that we try to do these tests in a hospital further down the south, putting some distance between us and the Lebanese border. Within the next 24 hours, Rinpoche was told that he had a large tumor in his liver and that southern Beirut was almost destroyed. A couple of days later, Rinpoche said this to Alec and myself. You should always be prepared. You never know where you will be in the next 6 hours. These Israeli pilots who were asked to bomb Beirut at such short notice were only able to do it because of their previous training. As Buddhists, we have to be prepared for death. Look at my case, for example. I thought I came to the hospital to treat a simple case of diarrhea, and now I'm told that I have advanced liver cancer. Like an Israeli pilot, I do not know where I will be in the next 6 hours. But if I am prepared, then I can go anywhere. It is very important to train and prepare yourself for the time of your own death. Then it will be easy to go at short notice. So, that's the approach somebody takes who's actually spent some time thinking about these things. So I've got another meditation that I wanted to lead us through. In general, the teachings talk about sort of two main ways to meditate on death. So Stephanie's going to talk about the second way here in a little bit. The first way is this 9-point meditation on death. It's an analytical meditation, which means that you sort of take these ideas and you kind of brainstorm about them. You try to bring in stories of things you've heard before, your own experiences, or, you know, stories you've heard of other people's experiences. You try to bring all those things in to generate sort of the real feeling, that intuition, that, you know, what they talk about is the realization of that idea. And if you get any glimpse of that, if you really get that, oh, yeah, then try to focus on that. Then you switch it into a concentration meditation to really hold on to that clarity. And if y'all are like me, that won't last very long. And when you lose that concentration, then you go back to the analysis. So that's the way we'll do this meditation. But because it's 9 points, it's a pretty long one. It's going to take us maybe 25 minutes. So I thought it might be helpful to just stand up for a minute first and just stretch for, you know, 30 seconds. Get the feeling back in your legs or whatever. And and the way I'm going to lead this is going to be a little more guidance than time to reflect, because ideally we'd take even longer. And you know, if you're doing it yourself, you can find those pieces where you've really got some juicy stuff going on and spend a little more time. And of course, as a group, I'm just going to try to keep it going steady. And so there'll be times when I'll move on faster than you wanted, and there'll be other times when you're like, oh, would she say the next sentence? So, but this is readily available if you want to practice it on your own, too, so that you really can pace it the way you want. So, this is just an intro. So, this is all based on the Lam Rim, and we should be coming up to this part of the Lam Rim on the Wednesday night class, actually, pretty soon. But it's based on the three roots, which are that death is certain, it's inevitable, that the time of death is not certain, we don't know when that's going to happen, it could be today, and then the third point is at the time of death, it's only your Dharma practice that will really be of benefit to you. So those are the three main categories, and there are three subcategories for each of those that we'll go through. So because this is longer than what we usually do, if you're feeling, you know, antsy and it's just really hard to sit still, just quietly get up. That's okay. So don't torture yourself and feel like you have to sit here at all costs and then create aversion to meditating, because, again, not what we're aiming for. So, okay, so this is a 9-point meditation on death. Just sit comfortably. Take a moment to settle your mind. And just remember, the most important thing is to keep your back straight. So we'll set a motivation. Just generate a positive motivation for doing the meditation. You can think something like, may this meditation help bring about greater peace and happiness for all beings. Or may this meditation be a cause for me to become enlightened, so that I can help all beings become free of suffering and become enlightened as well. whatever suits you. Set that motivation. So this first root, the inevitability of death. We plan many activities and projects for the coming days, months, and years. Although death is the only event that is certain to occur, we don't usually think about it or plan for it. And even if the thought of death does arise in our mind, we usually push it away quickly. We don't want to think about death. But it's important to think about and be prepared for it. So contemplate the following 3 points to get a sense of how death is definitely going to happen to you. So this first point is that everyone has to die. To generate an experience of death's inevitability, bring to mind people from the past, famous rulers and writers, musicians, philosophers, saints, scientists, criminals, and ordinary people. These people were once alive. They worked, thought, and wrote. They loved and fought, enjoyed life and suffered, and then finally they died. Can you think of an example of someone who was born on this earth but who did not die? No matter how wise, wealthy, powerful, or popular a person may be, his or her life must come to an end. The same is true for all other living creatures. For all the advances in science and medicine, no one has found a cure for death, and no one ever will. Now bring to mind people you know who have already died. And think the people you know who are still alive. Contemplate that each of these people will one day die, and so will you. There are several billion people on the planet right now, but 100 years from now, all of these people, with the exception of a few who are now very young, will be gone. You yourself will be dead. Try to experience this fact with your entire being. So the second point is that your lifespan is decreasing continuously. Time never stands still. It is continuously passing. Seconds become minutes. Minutes become hours. Hours become days. Days become years. And as time is passing in this way, you're traveling closer and closer toward death. Imagine an hourglass with the sands running into the bottom. The time you have to live is like these grains of sand continuously running out. Hold your awareness for a while on the experience of this uninterrupted flow of time carrying you to the end of your life. Another way to get a sense of your life moving continuously towards death is to imagine being on a train which is always traveling at a steady speed. It never slows down or stops, and there's no way that you can get off. This train is continuously bringing you closer and closer to its destination, the end of your life. try to really get a sense of this and check what thoughts and feelings arise in your mind. The third point is the amount of time you have for spiritual practice is very small. Since you're getting closer and closer to death all the time, what are you doing to prepare for it? The best way to prepare for death is doing spiritual practice. This is because the only thing that continues after death is the mind. And spiritual practice is the only thing that truly benefits the mind, preparing it for death and the journey to the next life. But how much time do you actually devote to spiritual practice, working on decreasing the negative aspects of the mind, such as anger and attachment, and developing the positive aspects of the mind, such as kindness and wisdom, and behaving in ways that are beneficial to others? Assess your life to see clearly just how much of your time is spent doing things that truly benefit yourself and others, and that will be helpful for your mind at the time of death and in the next life. By meditating on these first three points, you should be able to develop the determination to use your life wisely and mindfully. So the second root is the uncertainty of the time of death. By contemplating the first three points, you come to accept that you are definitely going to die. But you might think that death is not going to happen for a long time. Why do you think this way? Is there any way you can know for sure when death will happen? Contemplate the following three points to get a sense of how the time of death is completely uncertain and unknown. So this next point is that human life expectancy is uncertain. If human beings died at a specific age, say 88, we would have plenty of time and space to prepare for death. But there's no such certainty, and death catches most of us by surprise. Life can end at any point, at birth, in childhood, in adolescence, at the age of 22, or 35, or 50, or 94. Think of examples of people you know or have heard about who died before they reached the age you are at right now. Very difficult to feel convinced that death could happen at any moment. We tend to feel that since we have survived so far, our continuation is secure. But thousands of people die every day, and few of them expected to. Generate a strong feeling of the complete uncertainty of your own time of death, how there is simply no guarantee that you have long to live. The next point is that there are many causes of death. There are many different ways that death can happen to people. Sometimes death happens due to external causes. These include natural disasters, such as earthquakes, floods, and volcanic eruptions, or accidents, such as car or plane crashes. People can also be killed by other people, murderers or terrorists, or by dangerous animals or poisonous insects. Death can also happen due to internal causes. There are hundreds of different diseases that can rob us of our health and lead to death. There are also cases of people who are not ill, but their bodies simply stop functioning and they suddenly die. Even things which normally support life can become the cause of death. Food, for example, is something we need in order to stay alive, but it can sometimes lead to death, as when people overeat or eat food that is contaminated. Medicine is another thing which normally supports life, but people sometimes die because they took the wrong medicine or the wrong dose. Houses and apartments enable us to live comfortably, but they sometimes catch fire or collapse, killing the people inside. Bring to mind cases of people you know or have heard about who have died, and think of how they've died. Think that any of these things could happen to you as well. And the last point in this section is that the human body is very fragile. Our human body is very vulnerable. It can be injured or struck down by illness so easily. Within minutes, it can change from being strong and active to being helplessly weak and full of pain. Right now, you might feel healthy, energetic, and secure, but something as small as a virus or as insignificant as a thorn could become the cause of your death. Think about this. Recall the times you've hurt or injured your body and how easily it could happen again and even cause your death. By meditating on these second three points, we will develop the determination to begin our practice of the spiritual path right now, as the future is so uncertain. And the final root is the fact that only spiritual practice can help you at the time of death. No matter how much we've acquired or developed throughout our life, in terms of family and friends, wealth, power, travel experiences, and so on, none of it goes with us at death. Only our mind continues, carrying imprints of all that we have thought, felt, said, and done. It's vital that when we die, we will have as many positive imprints, which bring good experiences, and as few negative imprints, which will bring suffering, on our mind as possible. Also, we should aim to die at peace with ourselves, feeling good about how we lived our life, and not leaving behind any unresolved conflicts with people. The only thing that will truly benefit us at the time of death are positive states of mind, such as faith, non-attachment, calm acceptance of the changes that are taking place, loving kindness, compassion, patience, and wisdom. But in order to be able to have such states of mind at the time of death, we need to make ourselves familiar with them during the course of our life. And this is the essence of Dharma, spiritual practice. Realizing this will give us the incentive and energy to start practicing Dharma now and to practice as much as we can while we still have the time. You can experience a strong feeling of this reality by imagining yourself at the time of death and contemplating the following 3 points. First, that your loved ones cannot help you. As you lie on your deathbed, or as the plane you're traveling in is about to crash, what kind of thoughts would come into your mind? Our strongest attachments are usually to our family and friends. So you'd probably think of them and feel a strong wish to be with them. But even if they were present with you at the time of death, would they be able to help? Although they love you very much and do not want you to die, they cannot prevent this from happening. Most probably they will not know what to say or do that will give you peace of mind, and instead, their sadness and worry about the coming separation will affect you, stirring up the same emotions in your mind. When we die, we go alone. No one, not even our closest, dearest loved ones, can accompany us. And being unable to accept this and let go of our attachment to our loved ones will cause our mind to be in turmoil and make it very difficult to have a peaceful death. Recognize the attachment you have to your family and friends. See if you can realize that having strong attachment to people can be a hindrance to having a peaceful state of mind at the time of death. So it is better to work on decreasing this attachment and learning to let go. The next point is that your possessions and enjoyments cannot help. Your mind will probably also think of your possessions and property, which occupy a great deal of your time while you're alive and are a source of much pleasure and satisfaction. But can any of these things bring you comfort and peace at the time of death? Your wealth may be able to provide you with a private room in the hospital and the best medical care, but that is all it can do for you. It can't stop death from happening. And when you die, you can't take any of it with you, not even 1 cent or 1 article of clothing. Not only will your possessions be unable to help you at the time of death, but your mind may be caught up in worries about them. Who will get what? Whether or not they'll take proper care of your things. So that will make it difficult to have a peaceful, detached state of mind as you're dying. Contemplate these points and see if you can understand the importance of learning to be less dependent on and attached to material things. And the last point is that your own body cannot help. Your body's been your constant companion since birth. You know it more intimately than anything or anyone else. You've cared for it and protected it, worried about it, kept it comfortable and healthy, fed it and cleaned it, experienced all kinds of pleasure and pain with it. It's been your most treasured possession. But now you're dying. And that means you will be separated from it. It will become weak and eventually quite useless. Your mind will separate from it, and it will be taken to a cemetery or crematorium. What good can it possibly do you now? Contemplate the strong sense of dependence and attachment you have to your own body, and how it cannot benefit you in any way at death. Fear of pain and regret about leaving it will only compound your suffering. By meditating on the final three points, we should come to realize how important it is to work on reducing our attachment to the things of this life, such as family and friends, possessions, and our body. We should also realize how important it is to take care of our mind, as that is the only thing that will continue to the next life. Taking care of the mind means working on decreasing the negative states of mind, such as anger and attachment, and cultivating positive qualities such as faith, loving kindness, compassion, patience, and wisdom. Furthermore, as the imprints of our actions in this life will also go with our mind to the next one and will determine the kind of rebirth and experiences we will have, it is essential to try our best to refrain from negative actions and create positive actions as much as possible during our life. It is possible that you will feel fear or sadness when doing this meditation. In one sense, that is good. It shows that you've taken the ideas seriously and have contemplated them well. Also, it's important to get in touch with how you do feel about death so that you can work on being prepared for it when it happens. However, the purpose of the meditation is not to make you frightened. Just being afraid of death is not helpful. What is helpful is to be afraid of dying with a negative state of mind and a lot of imprints on your mind from negative actions you've done in your life. You need to get a strong sense of how terrible it would be to die like that so that you live your life wisely, doing as many positive, beneficial things as possible. Also, fear arises because of clinging to the idea of a permanent self. There's no such thing, so this is a delusion that just makes us suffer. If we keep death in mind in an easy, open way, this clinging will gradually loosen, allowing us to be mindful and make every action positive and beneficial for ourselves and others. And an awareness of death gives us enormous energy to not waste our life, but to live it as effectively as possible. So let's conclude the meditation with the optimistic thought that you have every possibility to make your life meaningful, beneficial, and positive. And in this way, you will be able to die with peace of mind. Recall the motivation you had at the beginning of the meditation and dedicate the merit of doing the meditation to that same purpose and for the benefit of all beings. So now, how's everybody doing? So, Steve, you want to take like a 3-minute break? Yeah, would people like to have a break or would you like to just keep going? How many people need a break? All right, 3 minutes. 3 minutes.
maybe 7 or 8 seconds to kind of get warmed up and get the signal. Okay. So if you just turn it on right away and don't start talking, then, I mean, sorry, if you turn it on and start talking right away, it won't pick up right at first. Then it goes on this way, so like this. Yeah, it's pretty interesting. In my opinion.
Yeah.
So.
I'm ready.
Okay.
Get going, because we got a lot to... Can y'all hear me? All right. Oh. While I'm sitting here. Okay. This will be painful.
Oh, Steeple, you need this.
Oh, okay. little puppy dogs.
So, I have a quote I'd like to start the second part here with. This is from Geshe Darge again, but first he's quoting Shanti Davis. So Shanti Davis says, "At the time of death, only goodness is of value, but to that I did not attend." And then Geshe Darge says, "If you know that you are moving to a country where the only valid currency is gold, you would be wise to convert all your old currency while you still have the opportunity. At the time of death, the only valid currency is spiritual realization, so you should practice Dharma intensively to gain that currency while you still have the chance." So, I kind of like that one. So, Geshe-la particularly asked Steep to... lead this section she's getting ready to do. Sorry, Stephanie. I'm going to call you Steep.
That's fine.
Okay. There were several reasons why Geshe-la suggested this. I don't know how many of y'all know much about Steep. She teaches, she leads DB and has for quite some time. At my very first introduction to Buddhism, I immediately became attached to Steep, and I would call her my Buddhist sponsor, you know, like in AA where you have your sponsor. So, I'm so angry right now, what can I do? You know, I call her. So, Steep works a full-time job and also she's really just done an amazing amount of practice. This is maybe not widely known, and I hope I'm not saying anything you don't want said, but...
Oh, yes.
She's done a million prostrations, so if you could imagine, like, just even what it would take to do 100,000, and then she's done that 10 times. she has a strong daily practice, and she has memorized this death dissolution meditation that she's going to lead us in and does that on a daily basis, too. So I could go on and on, but I think I've said way more than she's happy with me having said.
Okay.
So I'll quietly fade in the background now and let Steep take over.
Thank you very much. Thank you, thank you. And now we're going to get to the real heart of the matter. You know, you prepare yourself with these other meditations about so you won't be surprised when death happens, and this meditation is all about what happens when death happens. And but I wanted to talk just a couple of minutes about why I got into it. You know, when sometimes people ask me, like, what's, like, I ask you, I'm sure, what got you started on this path, you know, that led to all these accomplishments, so on and so on. And, you know, it's not like I'm a prodigy. The answer is really, really simple, which is that, you know, I had a profound fear of death. And we all know the benefits of having a fear. You know, it's like a match. It can light something and really help take off everything. But it can also be paralyzing if it burns you. So the point is to have like a controlled burn. And that's what we're talking about, because we all have different amounts of fear. And for me, it was more of a fear of a bad death. You know, we all hear hospice and people here talk about a good death. You know, they're very similar, having no regret, remorse, having a calm mind, being ready. And a bad death is just the opposite, having a mind filled with fear and panic and completely not being ready. So when I was 14, I was abducted at knife point and thought I was going to die for about 3 hours, definitely thought I was going to die. So that experience left me with my own little personal movie trailer for what it would be like to have an awful death. And that movie trailer ran rampant. It just come up all over the place. And, you know, it was like I had a spontaneous meditation on suffering all the time. And we know without the second, third, and fourth noble truths, the first truth is just a horror movie. And, of course, I didn't have anything to use, so was it just this horror movie running wild? And what did I do? Well, I got a tattoo. That was going to help me, right? So I got a tattoo. And when I went to college, I created a safety patrol so women could walk each other across campus. And it was an awesome thing, but didn't really prevent me from ever being murdered. And then when I went to New York, I took every kind of martial art I could find. I went to training camps. I got really strong. And these are all wonderful things, but still underneath it all, I knew there was no guarantee that I would not have an awful death. Then somehow Gandhi's autobiography came into my hands, and I read that he also wanted to make sure he didn't have an awful death. He had a different strategy. He was not taking martial arts classes or getting tattoos. He was wanting to make sure that the moment he died, he had the Hindu word for God on his lips. That's what he wanted to say at the moment of his death. So that's what he was practicing, and that's what he was preparing for. And he was murdered. He was assassinated at point-blank range, fell down, and said the Hindu word for God. This blew my mind. I thought, somebody did it. Somebody was able to do this. I know that I can't, you know, guarantee that I won't be murdered, but if somebody else was able to die in a situation like that peacefully, well, maybe I can. So the very next day, I went to Cameron Village Library and walked through the aisles of the religious section just hoping something would fall out that would give me this answer about how to prepare like Gandhi did. And I saw on the shelf the Tibetan Book of Living and Dying. I thought, well, God, it's got the exact title I want. Let's see what it says. And from page one to the very end, every single page had something about preparing your mind, training your mind, taming your mind, changing your life so that you can have a peaceful death. Because the moment of death propels you into your next state of being. So one thing leads to another. So the point is that in those stages of death, we have this calmest mind possible. So I'm really, really lucky because I can call up fear very quickly. Now that I have all this other information, it's like I can pick what I'm going to watch the trailer and then I can do something with it. So I feel extremely lucky. And we all have something that we can use to generate that kind of fear. And some of these meditations are for if you haven't really, but I mean, we all have something that we can use to generate that kind of fear. And then the point is, again, to have like a controlled burn. You know what I mean when I talk about that in the Forest Service? My sister works in the Forest Service, and they have controlled burns so they can keep down all the brush, right? You don't want to have a wildfire. You want to have a controlled burn and then really put that fear to good use. So one of the things I learned was the death dissolution meditation. Geshe-la has taught it a couple times. It can be like anything, extremely complicated or simpler. So I'm going to teach you some of the stuff that I was taught, and you will definitely leave here with enough information so that you can do the death dissolution meditation anytime you want. I memorized it so it was easy to do, and this is the meditation that Tendrilma might have been talking about to do when you're falling asleep. So Geshe-la suggested I do it when I'm falling asleep because that's similar to losing consciousness, right? Your consciousness is changing. But I also on the weekend tried to do it more thoroughly. I realize I'm a very poor substitute for Geshe-la, but you know, for whatever reason, he really wanted, he thought it would help if somebody heard somebody else, if you all heard from somebody who has a full-time job, then you can also memorize this and do this on a regular basis. So I want to show you a clip of His Holiness talking about this exact meditation. It's a 5-minute clip. I thought, well, let's bring him into the room since Geshe-la's not here. And he will talk about what he does, and then I'll go into greater detail about exactly what it involves, and then we'll do it. Okay? Mute it? No, I'm fine, thanks.
The dying person, while he or she alive, think more seriously about death, and at least she carries some sort of a meaningful life. That's much more important. Otherwise, after death.
So may I ask you a personal question?
Yes.
Do you yourself practice some rituals to prepare your death?
not a ritual, but simply, you see, the training of mind. And a visualization of, this is generally speaking, 8 different stages of dissolution. The body element, solid, liquid, and heat, energy, then consciousness. Consciousness also, grosser level of consciousness, more subtle, very subtle. So altogether, 8 as of the stages.
Stages of time.
Of dissolution.
Dissolution.
Sort of element, body element. From grosser level, more subtler, subtle, 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 like that. So that I, every day, I think, 4 or 5 times, compulsory. This is the visualization, these things. Suppose sort of preparing my death, but I do not know when actual death come. I really, you see, practice these things or not, that still do not know, no guarantee. So, here you see, I think this morning or lunchtime, I think I mentioned, there are cases, a person after death, body still remain fresh. Some cases, at the time of death, body because of long illness or old age, very weak. But after sort of stop breathing, the brain activities stop. The body becoming more fresh, more because of that.
Growing
on. So through that way, sometimes it remains a few days, sometimes few weeks. It happened. Last, I think, last over 50 years, as far as we notice, I think at least 30 or 40 such cases there. My own tutor, the 13 days after his death, the medical doctor checked his body, then declared dead, but body remained fresh. I think 2 years ago, one practitioner dead in New Zealand. So fortunate or unfortunate, his death take place in hospital. So the custom, the dead body has to remove from hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So then his fellow, a friend, they noticed his body remained very fresh, and I think remained like this. So they asked some kind of permission from the hospital authority. Then doctor come check. Yes, he dead, but his body no danger of smell or this decaying. Therefore, the authority of the hospital say, okay, you can keep. Now this case, one very strange thing. After 4 days, see his sort of hands, I think, remain like that. Then fourth night, his hand, I think the left hand is a tightly sort of hold. I said this finger on the other hand. Very strongly. So at that time I mentioned, oh, how pity. You should keep video 24 hours. Then how the movement is to come. So actually it happened. So I think about 10 days. as the body remains fresh. Then another very good Siddha Lama, you say, I think 18 days remain fresh. So now, the modern scientist say, Kasoda is something Tahasura, unusual, or unusual. No explanation. Now, only explanation is the different level of consciousness, gross level of element or consciousness stop. So brain activity stops. So brain is basis of grosser level of consciousness. But more subtle and subtle, innermost of subtle consciousness still there. So as soon as that subtle consciousness departs from this body, then immediately decay body. Now it's quite sort of strange sort of today.
Okay, so the meditation that His Holiness is referring to is what we're going to talk about, and I can't see any bad side effects of doing it. I've heard also similar concerns that, I'm creating the causes to die earlier, but actually you're not really creating the causes to die earlier, you're creating the cause to die with a calm mind, because what you're familiarizing yourself with are the stages of dying. And so then that is creating the causes to have a calm mind during those dissolution states. So we can talk about that more if that's a concern. And like I said, it can get very complicated, but you have this handout to refer to, and you also, there's this amazing book called Advice on Dying by His Holiness. It's out in the bookstore as well, and he goes into great length about each of these stages of dying that we're going to talk about. The name of the teaching is called Kusum, this K-U-S-U-M, Lamchar, L-A-M, and then chair, like a chair. And that means Kusum, Sum means body, Ku means body, and Sum means three. And then Lamchar, Lam, like Lam Rim, is a path, and Char is like take. So the teaching is called the three bodies of taking, the three bodies, or taking the three bodies to the path of enlightenment. And I know we don't have a whole lot of time, so I'm looking at things that I can delete and just go right to the heart of the matter. Birth, death, and the bardo, you know, the intermediate state, are the basis on which this is practiced. That's rain? Okay. It's a tantra practice in some ways, but what we're going to talk about is not really, because what we need to become familiar with in order to practice any kind of tantra are the three ordinary bodies of ordinary birth, ordinary death, and ordinary bardo state. And so this is explaining death, what happens to everybody at the stages of death. So when we get to the end stage, there's going to be something about red and white light. So I'm just going to start off again with the way that Geshe-la explained some of this to me. From the father comes the sperm. Along with that comes our elements, our bone, our marrow. From the mother comes blood, flesh, and skin. In a womb birth, which we all had, there's four elements, wind and channels. And all humans have these elements of a womb birth. This is important because, as His Holiness was talking about, the death dissolution process is all of these things dissolving, and what you experience is all of these things dissolving. And we're going to go through the different stages, and it's not that as we go through the stages, it'll seem like one is more present than it ever was before. But as he explained it to me, it's more like having on four layers of clothes, and you take off one layer, and now you're able to see the other layer more clearly. Then you take off that layer, and now there's this other layer that you're able to see more clearly. So it's these layers peeling away as these different elements dissolve one into the other. Basically, there's 25 gross matters that dissolve, and they're in these categories. You've heard of the aggregates? So there's five aggregates. Those are dissolving in an order. There's four elements that dissolve, earth, water, fire, and air. They're dissolving. I'm going to give you this list of these five, and then we'll go through the stages, because one from each list dissolves during the first stage, and then the second stage, another group dissolves, and then a third stage, another group dissolves. And when I'm doing the meditation, I'm not going in my head, okay, now that's this element, and that's that element. I've just memorized the experience so that when I do the meditation, I'm having the experience of these things dissolving. But I also think it's important that you have this information so when you look at your notes and the handouts, you'll know what exactly I was talking about. So again, there's the five aggregates, the four elements, the six consciousnesses and their homes, like eye consciousness, nose consciousness, ear consciousness, and then something called, and then there's the five objects, form, sound, smell, taste, and touch. And I know some of these will think like, well, we just talked about that. That was over. But again, you'll see in a minute how these dissolve. And then the last one is called the five wisdoms of Buddha. And these are the wisdom of mirror, the wisdom of equality, the wisdom of discrimination, of accomplishment, and reality. And as I go through this, again, they're parts of our being. And as they dissolve, they will appear in certain ways on the outside and on the inside to us as we're dying. And the point is to become extremely familiar with these, not to just memorize them, have them on this list somewhere, but so that you become very familiar with the stages of dying, so that when you're going through the stages of dying, you're not afraid. You know what's happening. You can prepare your mind, because at that moment of death, for a very highly practiced person, they can have the experiences His Holiness was talking about, right? You're going to have this opportunity to join your mind with this light that's arising, right? So that there's this, and we'll get to that, but there's this opportunity in a good death that is considered like gold. It's launching you to somewhere else. And that's what people are practicing. That's why people meditate on this exact process 6 or 7 times a day, so that when it arises, they don't squander that opportunity. At the very least, for somebody like me, it means that then I'm not afraid when these things are arising. I know what they are. I'm not taking them literally, because it will feel as though, for example, during one of them, as though there's a great weight on top of me. But if I understand, oh, this is the stage of death, then I won't get carried away with that kind of hallucination that I'm being buried. I'll understand that's the stage of death. Next one is coming, because I've reviewed it so many times. If I don't have that understanding, I can get really carried away and have all these negative experiences as I'm dying, which could propel me into a negative bardo state or negative life. So I had asked this one teacher, is the point of this practice to have no fear? And he said, no, the point of the practice is to become familiar, that when you become familiar, you have no fear. So, I just keep thinking about that myself over and over again, that the whole point is to become familiar. And then as I watched my mom die, I could see the different states that she was in. And her dying process took like 2 or 3 days. Some people it might take, you know, an hour. Some people it takes a week. But I could see it. Now, if I have a sudden death, I'm not going to go through those same dissolution process. I'm not, probably not. At least that's the things I've been reading. It will be much quicker. It'll be so quick I might not notice all of those if I die very suddenly. But also, it's still not a bad death if I don't have a lot of fear at that moment. Okay, so now you have those categories, and they're basically, I've got so many different notes here, guys. So I'm going to read to you the way that they dissolve, the way that I was taught, and then we're going to do it together. So you don't have to, you don't have to take notes on this. I'm going to lead you through it. It's a little bit different than the one you have, but not that much. And what I was just reading about why there's different. You might look in another book and see it written a little bit differently, and another book has it a little bit different way. That's because what I was just reading is that individual winds and channels in our body, you've heard of the chakra system, you've heard of winds and channels, they are a little bit different. So people will have a little bit different experience. And so some of the yogis who were practicing this in the different schools were writing it differently based on their experience. So don't be thrown by that. I would use the one from FPMT, the one in this book, they're very similar, and I would just stick with one and familiarize yourself with that, because you won't go wrong. Okay, so the things that I just mentioned, the aggregates, elements, they're all dissolving simultaneously, but I can't read simultaneously, so I'm going to have to describe them to you. And they're outer signs and then inner signs. So, external and internal signs. So during the first dissolution, the body becomes thin and weaker. So that's an external sign of the aggregate of form. The body becomes thinner and weaker. And then as this is happening, also your vision becomes blurry. That's the wisdom, the Buddha wisdom of the mirror. That consciousness that perceives things is dissolving. So the vision is becoming blurry. Earth element is dissolving. Yeah. And the body is becoming dry. The limbs are loose. The limbs can feel like they're sinking. Oftentimes, if we're watching someone die, this is when they often try to get out of bed over and over again, because it may feel like their arms and legs are falling. Your eye can no longer blink. Okay, and that's the eye consciousness. And then we lose our natural glow, our natural luster of being alive. Then the internal sign is that we will see what looks like a watery mirage. Everything is kind of unsteady and watery and blurry. And then we say to ourselves, and certainly in the meditation, mirage is here, smoke is coming, because smoke is the next internal sign. So that's the first dissolution. The second dissolution is the feeling aggregate dissolves. You can no longer feel the difference between pain, pleasure, and neutrality. And then the next one is the wisdom to remember. You can't remember what's the difference between pain, pleasure, and neutrality. And then the water element, the water in the mouth and the body, all the drops in the body become dry. Your mouth and nose dry and pucker. And then the ear consciousness, you can't hear external sounds. And then the last one is you can't hear internal sounds. And if you wonder what an internal sound is, just put your fingers in your ears and you'll hear this kind of like whirring. That's your own internal sound. You can no longer hear that. And then the internal sign is smoke arises. So then you say, mirage is gone. Smoke is here, and fireflies are coming. Now, again, if you were fearful and you hadn't familiarized yourself with these, you might experience the smoke as like a huge amount of smoke just overtaking you. Just like with the watery mirage, you might feel like you're in the middle of an ocean. Just, you know, it can be an extreme experience, or it can be, oh, this is what this is. This is the sign of smoke. And then you don't go get carried away, just like if you recognize that you're dreaming, the nightmare kind of dissolves and you're just like, oh, this is just a dream. Let me see what I can do. Same thing. Okay, so then the third one, the discrimination aggregate dissolves and you can't recall the names of the people around you, the people that you know. You can't recall who they are. I'm sorry, you can't recall your relationship with them. And then you can't recall their names. Warmth withdraws. This is the fire element dissolving. Warmth withdraws. So you get chillier. You can't chew or drink because of the warmth withdrawing. Your inhalation is weak. Your exhalation is longer and rough. It's stronger than your inhalation. And your sense of smell is gone. The internal sign is of fireflies or embers in a fire, that kind of sparkly. Again, this could be scary, but in your meditation, you'll always be aware of what's happening, and it's not frightening at all. So now fireflies are here. Smoke is gone. Fireflies are here. And light is coming. So now the fourth dissolution. The external signs. You can no longer move your body. You can't remember mundane external things like events, why you did what you did, the reasons you did something. You can no longer remember those. You're breathing, you can no longer inhale. Your tongue swells and becomes brown, bluish brown. And you can no longer taste. And at this point, scientifically, you're considered dead. Your sense of everything is, you can't feel anything at all. You can no longer feel your body. You can no longer have conceptual thoughts. And the internal sign is a flickering light, as though there's a candle at a distance. It's only dependent on its wick, and it's about to go out. And this means that each element has dissolved. And then there's one, there's a final one that, because of consciousness being the fifth aggregate. And this is a little more complicated. So whole books have been written about this, and trying to sum it up is a challenge. So the different parts of consciousness are dissolving now. And I wanted to read you just a little bit. I think you've heard before, Geshe-la, talking about the central channel being called and then the left and right channel. And we're going to go through this, and I'm going to guide you through it all uninterruptedly, but I wanted to tell you a little bit about what's happening at this point. So ordinarily, the wind does not move into the central channel. That's not an ordinary experience, but it happens during the process of dying because the right and left channels have collapsed, basically. And so in turn, the winds in the right and left channel enter into and dissolve into the central channel. The central channel is freed thereby, allowing movement of the wind inside it. This movement induces the manifestation of subtle minds. The winds on which a deeply blissful mind rides are intensely withdrawn from moving objects, and such a mind is particularly powerful in realizing reality. This is why people are practicing for this moment, to take advantage of this moment. Again, as I said, it gets kind of complicated with all the drops in the body and what's happening. But basically, physically, the winds on the right and left channel above the heart, have entered into the central channel through its opening at the top of the head. And due to this, the knot of channels at the top of the head loosen. This in turn causes the white drop that dwells at the top of the head, which is from the Father, and has the nature of water, to move downward. When it arises at the top of the sixfold knot of the right and left channels at the heart, a vivid white appearance dawns. So after the flickering candle, the next thing that will appear is pervasive white. Some people say it's like pervasive moonlight. What's happening physically, again, is these different channels. The right and left channel have collapsed, allowing wind to move through the central channel. If you want to visualize it as the letter HUM, it turns upside down and descends through the central channel right above the heart. At this time, then, the next thing that will happen is the appearance of a red-orange sky, like pervasive red and orange. What's happening physically is the winds on the right and left channel below the heart center enter the central channel through its lower opening at the base of the spine, at that chakra. Due to this, the knots of the chakras in the sexual organ and at the navel loosen. This causes the red drop from the mother in the middle of the chakra at the navel to move upward. As it moves to just below the knot on the right and left channels at the heart, so the red is below and the white is above. As this has happened, as the red is moved up, the appearance of a red-orange pervasive sky dawns. And next what will appear is a vivid black appearance, like a thick, dark night. And what's happening physically is the upper and lower winds inside the central channel gather at the heart. So remember, all this has been moving. The white has been moving down right above the heart. The red has been moving up right under the heart chakra. Now the upper and lower winds are inside the central channel gathering at the heart and loosening the sixfold knot of the right and left channels. At this point, the white drop originating from the top of the head further descends, and the red drop originating from the navel further ascends, with both entering into the middle of the indestructible drop at the heart. When these two meet, a vivid black appearance dawns. The mind becomes even more subtle. This is just what His Holiness was talking about. Things become subtler and subtler. More layers are being taken off. Now there's hardly any layers left. Each of these minds is dissolving into the other. At this point, unconsciousness is cleared away. I'm sorry, right before this, it's as though you faint. So it becomes dark. At first, there's some awareness. And then it's as though you faint. The mind becomes even more subtle than it is during the unconscious second part of the mind. The movement of the wind becomes weaker. And the state of the subtlest wind arrives. At this point, unconsciousness is cleared away, and the mind of clear light, the subtlest of all minds, non-conceptual and totally non-dualistic, is manifest. At this juncture, all conceptual activity has ceased, and the three conditions that prevent the emergence of the sky's true nature have dissolved, and those things preventing that were a white sky, a red sky, and a black sky, using that kind of metaphor. Those have all dissolved now, and what appears is a very clear openness, like an autumn sky at dawn, before sunrise, free from any sullying factors. Nothing else appears. This deepest consciousness is called the fundamental innate nature of clear mind, and all empty, because it is beyond the 80 conceptions and the three subtle minds. You have just dissolved all everything, physically, all the 80 conceptions and the three subtle minds. Physically, what's happening is the white and red drops dissolve into the indestructible drop at the heart, the white dissolving into its top, and the red dissolving into its red bottom. Thereupon, the winds inside the central channel dissolve into the very subtle life-bearing wind. This causes the very subtle wind and the mind of clear light to manifest. At this point in the meditation, it's important to just meditate on anything that you know about emptiness. For those who are conscious of the mind of clear light can remain in this state for longer periods, and depending on previous training, can even use it to realize the truth of the emptiness of inherent existence. Okay, so come back to this room for a minute. I know that's a lot. The last part is, it gets pretty complicated because we're not, you know, walking around feeling these drops and channels and chakras all the time or much time at all. But the point that His Holiness makes is that even trying to imagine this brings our awareness to these areas of our body and our consciousness, and it will help us. This is really creating the causes to have a powerful death, not to die prematurely, not to have a fearful death, but it is by just putting our mind on these different areas as much as we possibly can, it's going to create causes to feel them more and more, to be able to be aware of them in more and more ways. So we're having this kind of imaginary journey through a dying process and trying to make it as best as possible. So what I do then when I'm doing that last part, which can seem so complicated, you know, when I read to you what's happening physically, you know, you're not aware of that, those physical parts that are happening when you're dying. You're not aware that, oh, that channel collapsed, here's the red dress. You're aware of the signs. So when I do the meditation, that's what I'm seeing. I'm feeling like I fainted. I'm feeling like there's this incredible dawn of clear light, and then I'm just trying to meditate on emptiness for even a minute, whatever I can. So that's the kind of takeaway message, and you'll have all of that in your notes. So I would really suggest, you know, you give it a try and ask us questions and ask Geshe-la to come and talk more about it. It's also, I remember he was telling me, try this when you're falling asleep. And I said, yeah, but I did, and I just keep falling asleep. Like, I get to, like, the third stage, and then I'm falling asleep. He goes, that's fine. Great way to fall asleep. Because there's a mini version of this happening when you fall asleep. So he said, fantastic way to fall asleep. Then when you're alert and you have more time, really try to go through all of these stages. Any questions about it? Does it seem interesting or like, oh, my God, wackadoo? Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Are there any teachers who have recorded this meditation that we could listen?
Right. That meditation? No, but, you know, you could read it to yourself. You could tape it on, like, your iPad or something, because it's all in here. You know, those stages without all the extra stuff. So, you know, like you can say into a tape recorder, my body's becoming thin and weak, my vision's becoming dark and blurry. I'm going to do that for you in a second. But you can just tape that or have somebody else tape it and then play that to yourself.
It's just to decide what to keep and what not to keep as far as what you say.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have a recording of what you say today. So, right.
Yeah, let me just take a quick look at this. I think you don't need... Oh, gosh.
Right. We can listen to it from these.
Yeah, and I'll double check to make sure I'm correct on this. But I think when you're doing it, you know, here, if you see on your handout, there's the external signs and the internal signs.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I do. You could say, okay, earth element is dissolving in the body, da 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 da. Aggregate of form is dissolving, da 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 da. Basic mirror. But I don't do that. I do the actual feeling. Okay, my body's thin and weak, my mouth, you know. And then I always do the thing that I told you about. A mirage appears. Mirage is here. Smoke is coming. So, you know, like when you're driving on the road and it looks like there's a flood and it's really just the sun hitting the black concrete, that's the kind of mirage he's talking about, like a watery mirage. Or you're on some beach and it looks like there's water, but it's really just the hot sun on the beach. So it's a watery mirage. It's not like, you know, an oasis in the distance or something. Any other questions? Yeah.
You said this is like a mini version of this happens when we go to sleep.
Yeah.
Can you comment on any of those points, or is that...
Can I comment on them?
Do Do you know what it is, or?
Well, certain awarenesses are all dissolving into each other, but not in that same kind of way where here there's no turning around, you know. So it's not like we're dying, but I'll find out and get back to you because I want to make sure I give you the exact right answer.
Well, that could be instructive because that could help us learn.
Sure.
From observing what's happening when we go to sleep.
Man, it's really hard to get to that place where you can see, like, when... I mean, try to... Just try it as an experiment. When you're falling asleep, to see, can you be aware of when you shift your consciousness from waking to sleeping? You can try. But that would be great if you can, but it's really, really difficult. There are some people who can do that. One of the things I try to do, it's not really this meditation, but it's helping me, I think, prepare for the Bardo state, which is I try to be aware, am I dreaming? So I walk around all day going, am I dreaming or not? You know, and I try to, like, jump, see, like, can I fly? Not off of a bridge or anything, but just, like, up and down. And then every once in a while, in the middle of my dreaming, I'm going, wait a minute, I think this is a dream. And I'll try to jump, and I keep going. It's like, oh, this is a dream. And I get really excited, right? And so I've been trying to do that for a long, long, long period of time. And you can get pretty good at it. So then my hope is that then, you know, in the Bardo state, if something scary is happening, I go, wait a minute, I think I'm really dead. I don't really need to be worried about this, you know, something like that. Because I remember Geshe-la, I was telling him once, I was kind of scared for the Bardo state. I never thought about it before. Everything I was reading was kind of scary. He goes, oh, you just practice bodhicitta there, just like you're doing now. Just keep practicing there. I'm like, oh, okay. So that made me realize that, you know, if I can be aware of certain things, I can use my dreams each night as a practice to try to be aware. So that, to me, is easier than trying to be aware of, you know, those changes of consciousness as I'm falling asleep. So, but it's great. Use every minute, and I'll try to get the answer back to you. Okay. Well, it's also, you know, you can't move your arms and legs anymore. Your mouth and nose probably do get a little drier. You can no longer hear sounds. You know, when you're really asleep, all those consciousness shut down. You know, you're not smelling, you're not tasting, you're not hearing, but. Are you aware of all of those? You know, what internal signs are appearing? I don't know that those internal signs are exactly the same, you know. And there is a moment. I mean, you know, it's not your right and left channel have not dissolved, you know, or you know, but there are some similarities that you could use as you're falling asleep. But again, I find it much easier to use my dreams, you know. Yeah.
I was wondering, people die.
If you say your question, I'll say it again.
I was wondering, people die in very different ways. Some people have cancer or something, and they have a long, kind of drawn-out period maybe, and some people are driving on the freeway and they die instantly in an accident. Does that alter the way that
yes.
it happened, you know, or is that even known? I was curious.
Yeah, if you die suddenly, you're probably not going to have the chance. All these things will still be happening, but they'll be happening so fast.
Yeah, I was wondering.
Yeah, so you might not have that chance. You still die with a peaceful mind, but you the benefit of knowing that you're dying and having some time is being able to try to take advantage of those states.
It's basically the same process, it just happened so fast.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I was just reading today, and I'd heard Geshe-la tell me that as well, that, you know, they still happen, but it'll be just so fast that that's why some people, you know, don't realize that they've died. It's been such a quick experience. But, you know, even somebody who's, if they're not prepared and they're dying a slow death, sometimes those people haven't realized they're in the intermediate state, they don't realize they've died, you know. And I remember when I first read this book, and I was so excited about this. You'll hear about it more, about the child and the mother light have a chance to join, and that's, you know, that this clear light of mind arises, and then you can join your understanding of emptiness with that. And that's what Geshe-la was trying to explain to me. And so I was very excited, and I was like, you mean every being that dies, there's this arising of the clear light of mind? And he was like, yes. And he said, yes, but a donkey is not going to have a chance to join. And I just didn't get it for a while. But he was saying that donkey, when it dies, is going to have that moment where the clear light of mind arises. But it's going to, they're not going to recognize it. They're not going to take advantage of it. They have not meditated on emptiness. So what you're trying to do is join your awareness, and that's called the child light, with this mother light, your awareness of emptiness with that opportunity, and join that together. And that's when people are, you know, what His Holiness was talking about, in this blissful state for days and days and days. But even somebody who's not as accomplished as the people he was describing still have a chance to recognize that that's what's happening, is that the clear light of mind has arisen. And it's much, there's a really good description of it in this book, so I know I'm not doing it justice. We can just leave it on.
I had a thought on when you're talking about dreams where you're aware. That's actually called lucid dreaming.
Right.
And I've heard of athletes even using it to train. But
right.
It's, some people even say, if you choose an object like a clock or something and you notice that the time's changing every second, then you know you're dreaming. And, I mean, I've actually had that experience once, but
right.
It's I think it's difficult to lucid dream. I think it takes a lot of practice. But
yeah, some people have more luck with it than others. But, you know, certainly what we can all do is walk around all day going, am I dreaming? Am I dreaming? You know, because that it helps puncture our belief that this is such a solid, perfect, or this is a solid reality and exists. You know, so Geshe-la said that's the best preparation if you want to try to lucid dream. It's also the best way to help us dissolve our view that this is such a solid reality. And so what I did is I tried to create certain triggers throughout the day. It's also a really good exercise just for your memory. So I remember saying, okay, every time I open a door, I'm going to think to myself, is this a dream? Well, I must have walked through 3 million doors before. I mean, all day long, I'd walk through doors, and at the very end of the day, I went, oh, my God, I didn't do it once, you know. So then I got pretty good. Every time I opened a door, I was able to do it. So then I tried to change the trigger. Like, okay, every time I exchange money, I'm going to ask myself, am I dreaming? And what it started to do was it just made me a lot more mindful. And then I tried to conjoin it with something else. Like, okay, so now I'm asking myself if I'm dreaming, but that's all I'm doing. Now I should say, well, if this is a dream, what would I do? Oh, maybe I'll say a prayer. Maybe I'll, you know, try to raise up my motivation rather than just plowing through the day, this kind of consumer mentality. So, you know, you can use everything like that to just try to have more alertness. And if you're questioning everything, then that certainly will carry over into your dream state, into the Bardo state. You know, to question it always. All right, so any other questions, or I'm going to lead you through the meditation one. This will be a shorter way than that last one I did. So get comfortable. It won't take that long. But try to set your motivation for the highest possible, you know, that you would doing this meditation so that you can have as positive a death experience as possible, so that your mind can become as clear as possible, so that you can help as many beings as possible. And I'm going to say it in first person, but you just, that's for you as well. So we imagine that we're dying. My body becomes thin and weak. My vision is dark and blurry. My arms and legs feel like they're falling. I can no longer blink my eyes. My natural luster is gone. And the inner appearance of a watery mirage arises. I am calm. I am peaceful. Mirage is here, and smoke is coming. I can no longer feel the difference between pain, pleasure, and neutrality. I can no longer recall the difference between pain, pleasure, and neutrality. My mouth and nose dry and pucker. I can no longer hear external sounds. I can no longer hear internal sounds. Smoke appears. Mirage is gone. Smoke is here. And fireflies are coming. I can no longer recall the names of all the people around me. I can no longer recall the relationships of the people in my life. Warmth withdraws. I can no longer chew or drink. My exhale is longer than my inhale. It's jagged, longer, and rough. I can no longer smell, and fireflies appear. Smoke is gone, fireflies are here, and light is coming. I can no longer move my body. I can no longer recall the mundane details of this life. I can no longer inhale. My tongue becomes bluish black, thick, and I can no longer taste. I no longer have any mental conceptions, and there is a flickering light in a distance. Fireflies are gone. Light is here. Now there's arising a pervasive white sky. Now there is an arising of a pervasive red-orange sky. Now there is an arising of a thick, dark sky. And I know I'm about to lose consciousness. Now is the time to pay attention. I lose consciousness briefly and the arising of a clear sky, fresh autumn sky arises. This is the clear light of mind. Meditate on emptiness. Join your mind understanding of emptiness with the clear light that is arisen. Anybody not have fun? It's supposed to be, you know, like everything else, empowering. And so if you have any hesitation going into it, you know, stop and get clear before you start your meditation to make sure that that you just rearrange your thinking before you go into it, because it's meant to be powerful and you're meant to be setting, kind of paving the way for you to have a very powerful death experience. Okay. And I apologize for kind of the rushed description of it. It's such an important teaching, so I just really encourage you to get more information about it and ask a lot of questions. And again, there's lots to read about it. But once you've memorized that which I just said, which is not hard to memorize, right? It's really, really not hard to memorize that. You can do that anytime. You know, you can do it in a formal meditation or just kind of reviewing those stages. You get your mind very familiar with it. Okay. So thanks for coming. And
it's being recorded, so you can get what she said off of the computer out here probably in a few days. Yeah.
And it's also, you know, if you look at this, if you look at the handout, the external signs, the chart, it has the external signs and the internal signs. Just read down that and kind of memorize that. Then you can just do that for yourself real easily. And I'll ask Geshe-la to make sure, but I know, oh, this element is dissolving into that. So I don't say it out loud to myself. The elements are on the side, on the left-hand side. So you get real familiar with those. You don't have to say it during the meditation.
Okay. So what I'm thinking in the interest of time is we'll do a short dedication, and then anybody who has questions, I'm happy to still stick around, and I don't know, Steve, if you have time or not to do that, but that way, you know, we can officially conclude, and then if people have questions, we can still take them. So if you turn in the prayer books on the back of the base sheet, let's just do, under the dedication prayers, sort of about halfway down, let's just do those first two stanzas. So, due to the merits of these virtuous actions, may I quickly attain the state of a Guru Buddha and lead all living beings without exception into that enlightened state. May the supreme jewel bodhicitta that has not arisen arise and grow. And may that which has arisen not diminish, but increase more and more. So let's just think about anything positive that was created here today, and let's just rejoice that we've spent this time and dedicate anything positive so that we can both be of great benefit to ourselves and then ultimately to be of greatest benefit to all beings. And thanks everybody for coming.